Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Do you hear that? Do you see that? There's more to what you see and hear in this shifted reality. I hear my guardian angel talking to me. This is Maria, and I have a guardian angel named Fija. Together, we will talk to you about the different shifted realities. Join us. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Have a peaceful day.
The Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I'm going to welcome back Eleanor Wagner. She is an author, a paranormal investigator, a podcast host, and we will talk about her new book, Sussex County Hauntings, Part 3. And I'll be right back with my conversation with Eleanor right after these brief messages.
Are you fascinated by true crime like us?
If so, check out our podcast, Crime Divers, hosted by me, Jill.
And me, Laura.
Look out for new episodes every Tuesday when we discuss true crime from around the world.
So what are you waiting for? Come join us as we dive in.
Today I welcome back to the show author, paranormal investigator, and podcast host, Eleanor Wagner. Eleanor has a new book out, Sussex County Hauntings, Part 3. We're going to talk about that book, a couple of her other books, her paranormal team, and also Eleanor's podcast. Welcome back to the show, Eleanor Wagner.
Thank you so much for having me back again.
Explain to my listeners, you know, when did you get interested into the paranormal?
Well, I've always been interested in the paranormal. I've been seeing spirits since I was a kid, and my fascination with ghosts just increased as time went on. But really, the gifts that I had didn't come full blown until I was awakened the day my father died. And that started it all when I was 30. I've been a writer since the seventh grade in grammar school. And when I had finished writing my first book, which was a psychological thriller called Dream, a Little Dream, I was in the midst of writing my second psychological thriller when my attention got diverted to writing true account ghost hauntings. And the reason for that is my favorite place in New Jersey is Cape May. And each time I visit it, it's extremely haunted. And there's always a new book out on new and more recent stories that take place in the many locations around that county. I live in Sussex County and know personally that it's haunted because I owned a haunted shop in Sussex on Main Street and said, you know what? I really like the books that they have out in Cape May. I wonder if anyone would be interested in sharing their true account stories in the county here. And that's how it started that endeavor. Thought it was only going to be one book, but I've since written Sussex 2 and Sussex 3 and actually took a brief reprieve in between to write Warren County Hauntings, and I'm presently writing Morris County Hauntings. So it really took off. The people responded very well and wanted more. So I've continued to write those books because people like the history and learning about the locations that the hauntings take place in, and then hearing people's stories. And if my paranormal team gets to go in to a location, the people love to hear what we unearth while we're there. So it makes for a fun story.
Warren County Hauntings and Sussex County. What's the other one?
The one that I'm writing now is Morris County Hauntings. I've got files on Passaic County, Pike County, Orange County. But I am going to be moving to Granville County in North Carolina. And when I was last there, I was doing some questioning to locals and getting some really good hot spots. So I'm sure there'll be some North Carolina books coming out in the future.
So you're moving your residence to North Carolina?
My husband and I are retiring there eventually, but we're going to have a house that's kind of like a summer type place to go when we're off season here. And so I do have a following in Sussex County. You can live in two places at once, right?
Right. I mean, there's hauntings everywhere, you know?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about your paranormal team. New Jersey Spirit Hunters Paranormal Team, you know, formerly known as the Lady Ghostbusters team. Why the change?
Okay. Well, we started out with Lady Ghostbusters, and it was primarily women. Obviously, there was one man at the time when I first started it. Teams change over time. There was a huge drama episode going on, and everything just exploded. So when the team revamped, I had equal amount of men and women. And I thought it just wasn't a good idea to keep the Lady Ghostbusters name and say they were paranormal investigators. So as a team, we collaborated and worked on different names, throwing things out, what we liked. And we all, as a group, came up with New Jersey Spirit Hunters. And so that's why we reinvented ourselves that way.
And what are some of the most recent investigations you've been on?
Recently, we've been to Pennhurst Asylum, which is in Pennsylvania. We also did a local manor house, which was formerly the residence of a mobster, which was really interesting, really interesting. Then we pretty much, they've been private residences, but in a week, we'll be going to the Burlington County Jail, which will be really fun. We're collaborating with Scaredy Cat Paranormal for that one. He organized it, and we're going to be going there. So we've been kind of hopping around. Oh, we also did the Elks Club, because we did the Elks Club in Boonton, New Jersey. And then, of course, when they talk to one another, word gets around. One of the other Elks Clubs reached out to me and said, hey, my buddy from Boonton said you had paranormal investigation at their place, and we have really a lot of activity in our lodge. Would you come here? And so we did that as well.
Do you prefer residential over industrial or commercial?
Yeah, no, I have absolutely no preference. If somebody has something that's going on and they want us to come in, I do. I mean, you know, because I write the books and I write the chapters in the books, I usually end up knowing exactly what's going on in the place before we go in, because I've spoken to the residences or the business owners, but I'll never share it with the group I want to see what they come up. I want to see what they come up with.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. You know, go into open slate where you're not expecting this and this and this to happen.
Right, and then when the homeowner knows that, or the business owner knows that, it's just me that knows. It also makes them realize that we're not going to lie or make anything up. They're going in blind, essentially, and using their gifts and experience to try and figure out who's there and what they want to say and why they want to say it. And if we can help them to move on, or at least have the homeowner or business owner be able to, I guess, say, live in harmony, so to speak, with spirit, we try to do that.
You're talking about the investigating the jails. Are the jails still active?
No, I believe the jail that we're going to is inactive. It's a museum now that is open to the public and paranormal investigating.
Yeah, because there's one I want to go to. Some friends of mine own in Tennessee, Scott County Jail. Dr.
Chris Sumner
and
Ghost
Biker, Miranda Young. Miranda Young, wow.
They're great. I know that's, if I ever go that way, that's on my bucket list too, because she's been on my show twice. And well, she's been on one of my shows, and then she was on the other show, and just a really nice gal. And it seems like it would be definitely a good investigation, producing lots of evidence. It's pretty active.
Chris Sumner, she's a twin, and her twin sister, we have a town not too far from us, within like 30 miles, Twinsburg, Ohio. They have a festival every year.
Just
for the twins. It's for twins. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw her post it the last time they went, and they always take these cute little pictures together. Did you get to meet her there?
No, I haven't been there. And that's what's weird is my daughter only lives like a town over. I said, yeah, I'd like to go, you know, actually meet her and maybe have a cup of coffee or something. You know, it's cool to run into people that you feel like you know them because of the podcasting. And, you know, I've been on their shows and they've been online.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And I know everybody says, oh, if you come into town, check us out. And I always say, I reciprocate, vice versa, look me up, because you never know. The opportunity arises.
Yeah, I think I've only been to Jersey once. I think it's and I loved it because I love their bagels. Where I was at, that this fantastic bagel shop that, you know, they made the bagels in the ovens, and I was like, I just for some reason I know the accent and that and the bagels.
Yes, we do have good bagels. We do have good bagels. Yes.
How far out do you go for your investigations with your team?
Well, we've gone locally an hour and a half, but we have gone out when we went to Pennhurst. That was 2 or 2.5 hours, and we ended up staying the night at a local hotel. So we have ventured out. It's just that because of my books and people knowing that I'm writing them, a lot of these opportunities come up within the vicinity. So we really don't have to travel far.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very blessed to have all these opportunities. I know a lot of people struggle to get into locations because they just don't have the connection or don't know how to go about doing it. But because I've written these books, people know that it's something that I do. So they'll email me or call me, try to get in touch with me however they can through a friend or a friend of a friend. And the next thing I know, I'm doing an investigation in their home or their business.
Yeah, I just did one this past summer, you know, to a person that could contact me, and it lives about maybe 60 miles south of me. And there was in a wooded area with these one lane roads and dirt roads and little Amish community. And I'm like, my GPS went out, and I didn't really go there to investigate the house. I went there just to do the interview at his house.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that the house was built like late 1700s, and it was moved to the point where it's at now. But I'll tell you what, you know, without having any paranormal equipment with me and just my cell phone, you know, and how the pressure in that house is so great. To me, that's the most important thing, is my physical contact with these spirits, you know. And I think you feel the same way. If you're pushed or you see a shadow figure.
You can sense it.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my thinking is because the house was sat on Indian burial grounds.
Oh, sure.
Because when he was digging his garden, not plowing his garden, you know, he come across Indian artifacts. And then, so I know for sure that that's an Indian burial grounds. And he's seen like an image of a Indian like walking down the tree line, kind of like a skinwalker, but it was like an Indian. I don't know how to explain it, but I'll tell you what, inside that house, I got dizzy, nauseated by my cell phone cracked in four, like evenly four sections on my screen. It turned upside down. I seen the shadow figure. You know, so to me, I didn't have any paranormal equipment, but what I witnessed was enough.
When what you felt, right? Hey, Al, do you paranormal investigating? Or is that just a random thing that happened?
I used to years ago when I did my documentary. I did a video documentary on ghosts in the valley, hence my podcast. But and it was northeastern Ohio, western Pennsylvania. I was investigating back then with a friend of mine who he was inventing like your spirit boxes, detect these spirits.
Oh, to use them.
Oh, right, right, right. And so when he went to get the patent on his device he was using, that we were using, the person in the patent office stole his patent.
That sucks.
You know, so
isn't that awful?
It's terrible.
It's like a whole other Facebook thing happening.
Right. So I didn't do really a lot of investigation, maybe one or two, but you know, they were powerful, the ones I did do. Just led me into my documentary. But I can really relate to all the paranormal team that's been on my show, psychics, mediums, the whole nine yards. You know, because I've been there, done that. I was going to get that with my next question. That, you know, during some of your investigations, have you or any of your team been hurt or injured during an investigation?
The only thing that's happened is that on occasion at an investigation, one of like the sensitives would have been pushed. Not enough to injure them and force them down the stairs, but they were physically pushed and knew that they were being pushed. And I would affirm that it was something that was in the history, that was something that the family told me about. They'd had the same thing happen to them. So I, as I mentioned to you earlier, it was something that I already was aware of, so that when the sensitive came up to me and said, "You're never going to believe this. I was almost pushed down the stairs." It was like, yeah, I'm going to believe it because I already knew that. So that kind of thing. But fortunately, no one's ever actually been physically hurt beyond that. Other than I do have to say that there was one incident in an old sea captain's house where there were two brother spirits. One was a good brother, one was a not so good brother. And we had two mediums that were there and who would normally get along with one another on this particular occasion did not. And ended up realizing, because of the third medium that was there, that there were the two brothers that were conflicted. And one was associating with one medium, and the other was associating with the other. And in that instance, the one woman did get a scratch on her back. So that was probably the only other thing that happened.
Kevin, to another question, have you ever come across anything demonic during an investigation?
I have not, fortunately. I do have a team member, though, Art Peterson, who was in the presence of a demon when he was in Burnbrae Mansion, along with two other people that were paranormal investigators there for the weekend. And he actually walked into something happening and took a photo. You could see the demon in the photo, which is kind of creepy, but that's pretty much the only time we've ever had anything like that happen, I'm glad to say.
Sometimes a lot of investigators or people in their own home, they come across something that's ornery or bad spirit, and they'll think that it's a demonic, and it's not.
Yeah. And no, it's not, because we were humans in life or humans in death. So if we were nasty and shitty in life, we're going to be nasty and shitty in death.
You got that right.
And then you also have the elementals thing. I've never had any encounters with elementals before. And then we did an investigation where we actually had one. And it was like, oh my gosh, I've heard about them, but I've never encountered them before. And this particular elemental was disguising itself as a child, but you could tell it was not a child. You knew that something was off. You could tell that something was off. And this elemental was very controlling of the other spirits in the building and actually wouldn't let them communicate with us. The older of the spirits, the elderly man who did manage to tell us, it's not letting me talk to you. But you do have those things that come into investigations here and there. And, you know, you have to kind of outrule things. It's not going to necessarily be a demon. It could just be an angry, nasty spirit.
Right. You had said, if you're shitty in life, you know, before in life, you're going to be shitty in death. I have heard, you know, from a past guest, if you're an asshole in life, you're an asshole in death. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, like you said, you go to a funeral sometimes. Sometimes you go to a funeral and you know the guy in that casket laying there. I mean, he was an asshole his whole life. Oh, he was such a good. No, he wasn't. You know, you know. So, yeah, you're right. But, you know, you come across that, you know, people, oh, I've seen a demon. And I, not myself personally, but a couple other investigators I know. And there wasn't, it's not a demon. It's just ornery spirit, you know.
That's right. That's right.
So moving on to your podcast, you have two podcasts.
I do.
You have the Eleanor Wagner Strange and Scary World and Creeping It Real, correct?
Yeah, it's called Creeping. Not Creeping. Come on, get that accent. Creeping.
Creeping It Real. Yeah,
that's right. The paranormal UK show, the Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World, that's a pre-recorded show like yours is right now. So we do go through that editing phase where we can get out all the nonsense before the show airs. But the Eleanor Wagner's Creeping It Real at Coast to Coast Entertainment Network is a live show. And that one, obviously, in a live show, things happen and you don't know whether you're going to make an error. And if you make an error, there's nothing you can do about it because it's live. You might have technical difficulties. If that happens, it happens. You just kind of have to work your way through it. But you have the benefit of not having to worry about editing the 6 hours that you normally would have to do if you were doing a pre-recorded show.
So how long have you been podcasting?
Well, the Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World, it's over a year now. In November, it was in November that I started. And then the Creeping It Real show will be a year this April. So
okay,
they're off by about 6 months.
I haven't heard Creeping It Real yet, but I have heard, I think, a couple of your episodes on the Strange and Scary World.
Scary World. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the couple of the guests you have on there. And here.
The live show I have on paranormal teams from around the country and around the world. And they come on either by themselves or with one or two of their team members. And I usually ask them to talk about three of their most famous investigations. And then what they'll do is they'll provide me with audio or video footage from the show, or if they got photographs, they'll bring photographic evidence. So let's just say somebody comes on and says, okay, I'm going to talk to you about our investigation at Pennhurst. So what I'll do is like what I do with my books. I'll tell you about Pennhurst and give you a history of its background and why people say it's haunted. And then I'll talk to them and they'll tell us what happened when they were there. And if they've brought some kind of video footage, the techie guy will put it up for the viewers to watch or listen to or view. Usually the three investigations warrant a good hour of conversation, and people just love to hear those stories and see the video footage. So that's the live show. But the but you already know Paranormal UK is kind of everything strange and scary. So if I have somebody that comes on with UFOs or Bigfoot or just paranormal in general, or just an ordinary person that's, you know, I work at the grocery store, but it's haunted, you know, that kind of thing. People like to hear those stories too. So I kind of try and mix it up a bit.
Yeah, and I love hearing things I never heard before, you know. So I constantly learn on this show from my guests. You know, there's certain things I've never heard before.
Me too.
A new Bigfoot and the Mothman and Dogman. Some of these other ones like Thunderbird. I just heard about that. About a huge, gigantic bird. I'm all, you know.
The people seem to think it's like prehistoric and from the dinosaur era. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the Fae, you know, the Fae people. Well, you know, I just learned about that last year. So, yeah, I love learning new things on this show.
Me too.
And one guy from the South, I think, was said the Woodbooker. You know, I found out the Bigfoot was called Woodbooker down in some of the southern states.
Oh, no kidding.
So I learned that. I said, you know, okay, I never heard that before.
Me either.
Interesting people and your guests that come on the show, you know, and I don't discredit anybody comes on, you know, they all have a story to share. Sure. I'm not going to say they're lying. I mean, only they know. So I'm taking their word for it.
If they're lying and it's a good story, then it's a good story we like listening to.
You're originally from the Bronx.
I am. Yes.
Okay. So now a New Jersey girl. Do you miss the Bronx or have you ever gone back there to visit?
Well, my mom lived in the Bronx up until she passed away. Mm-hmm. So that was probably about 7 years ago or so, but I haven't been back since. I have my memories. I go back in my head a lot to those memories growing up there, I really don't miss it that I have to get and go back there. You know, I live in New Jersey and that's where I am. I'm always present in where I am and I'm fine with that.
I know that there's tons of activity in the New Jersey area just from past guests and stories I get sent to me. Do you know of any places in the Bronx that are haunted like Jersey?
I absolutely know my old house was the one I grew up in.
In the Bronx?
Yeah. That's where I first saw my first spirit. And then I know an area called German Stadium was another one, and Edgewater Park is another one.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what, Al? Every place is haunted. It doesn't matter. Where you're at. I know Manhattan is loaded with apartments that are haunted. There isn't a place that isn't haunted. Every place is haunted. You just have to have people that are willing to talk about it.
I see that you've been married for over 30 years. Congratulations.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Is your husband interested in the paranormal?
My husband lets me play in my playground, but he is a believer disbeliever. And what I mean by that is, he'll say, how come my parents don't come and talk to me? And I'll be like, because you don't open up yourself to it. And they know I do. So that's number one. If he gets the shit scared out of him, he wants me to bring in a priest and exorcise the house. That's the way he words it. I'm like, why would you exorcise a house? You don't bring in a priest to do that. When there's a ghost in the house. So he believes, but he doesn't want to admit it, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
That's the same with my wife. You know, she she lets me go on with the, she didn't want me going on to that house that was haunted. And I do have crosses. You can't see them on my wall. I have crosses on my wall and in the back of me. But because I know people bring, or you can carry a spirit with you.
Sure.
I do a protection prayer. I don't know if you do as well, before I enter and when I leave.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I wear protective stones too. And I wear a protective necklace and protective oils. And our team members carry sage with them just in the event that we need to sage ourselves when we come out of a very heavy environment, that sort of thing. But yes, we do open up with prayer before we leave. We tell them they can't come home with us.
No, I see you have two daughters. Are they interested as well or not?
Both my daughters are sensitive to a certain extent. The younger one has absolutely no desire because she's had some things happen to her and she's not interested in the least. The older one, I think, would be more receptive to it. They've both actually been co-hosts on my show at one time or another. So to that degree, I can get them. But I think Cassidy is more fearful of the investigating end of things. And I think Tori is just more bored. She'd rather be doing something more interesting to her. So
just had a past guest on and her whole family, they go out together. And I think they've been almost every state in the United States investigating, which I think is pretty cool. And they do it as a family.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Bobby J. Gallo and the Gallo Family Ghost Hunters? He's a friend of mine, and he's been ghost hunting with his wife and two daughters since his daughters were like 9 and 10 or 9 and 11. And they still do it today. They go around the country and investigate, and they have, I don't know, hundreds of videos of their investigations already.
Yeah, sounds like the Granado family I'm talking about. You know, they do the same thing. You know, she has like over 50 books written of, a lot of hers is in Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's so funny. He's in Pennsylvania too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that is really funny.
I don't know if you heard of Stan Gordon. He's been on the UFO Witness miniseries. It was on, I think it was on Discovery Channel. He's written a book on Kecksburg UFO crash in 1965. Matter of fact, my wife and I just went there last summer to the Kecksburg, Pennsylvania UFO Festival. That was very interesting. So I got to talk to people. They were just little at the time of that crash, and they can remember to this day about the men in black coming into their homes.
Oh, that makes for a good show, Al. I'd like to listen to that one.
Really, that was really great. That was a good show. Mm-hmm. Being there. So this year, I want to go back to Kecksburg. I want to go to the Mothman Festival in Point View, West Virginia. Yeah, so I have some places I want to go to. I want to go to the Berkshire Mountains in Massachusetts. And
oh, Berkshire. That's right. At the Berkshires.
That was the next Netflix series.
They actually had an Unsolved Mysteries episode.
Right. And I had every single one of them people on my show.
Did you really? How did you get them on? I was trying to locate them myself. Well, because you met them there?
No. I just went online and dug into the, where can I contact them? And I got...
I tried too, but you were better at it than I was.
Tom Reed, I got Tom Warner, I got Melanie Kirchdorfer, all three of the people that were, plus I got the director of the Berkshire. So it was pretty cool, you know, getting all their inputs on what happened. Yeah. Like I say, you know, it's the people you meet on your show, you know, that you learn new things. It's crazy out there because there's the activity everywhere in paranormal.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're going to take a short break right here, and I'll be right back with Eleanor Wagner right after these brief messages.
Are you interested in all things paranormal, ghosts, EVPs, cryptozoology, and the history behind the legends we all love, but you don't have an hour out of your day to listen to another podcast? Well, then you should listen to Ghostly Paranormal, where we talk about all of those subjects and condense it down into 15 minutes or less. Check out Ghostly Paranormal.
Okay, I'm back with Eleanor Wagner. Now we're going to get into your new book. Just came out, well, a couple months ago, Sussex County Hauntings Part 3.
Yes. Well, Sussex County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena Part 3 is a continuation of the True Account Hauntings in Sussex County. But if you're a reader of mine, you'll know that the Other Strange Phenomena chapters also include things that are not necessarily in Sussex County. So in the first book, I wrote about UFO encounters and Bigfoot sightings. In the second book, I was able to write about people's visit from deceased loved ones, because those are not necessarily ghost stories. Those are spiritual visits from your loved ones after you've died. And then people love to hear the stories of when they were with their loved ones at their time of death, very poignant stories. That was in the second book. When I was writing the third book, which at the time was Warren County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena, of course, it had to do with true account hauntings in Warren County, but I also wrote about near-death experiences, true accounts from people around the world, which was great reading. And then when I came out with Sussex 3, I said, okay, this is going to be the final book in the Sussex County Hauntings series. And I ended up writing about reincarnation in those chapters, along with other stories that people share of visits from deceased loved ones. Although I do have a bunch of other stories about Sussex County, they'll end up in other books. So I will have Sussex County stories in the Morris County edition and the Other Strange Phenomena chapters. It's a good way to get around that little loophole.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there going to be a Sussex County 4, 5? I mean, no. I mean, how many books were you
I could probably go on but I think that you should stop it somewhere. No one says that there isn't going to be a good story here and there that you can put in, because I did add chapters in this last book where it's ghost stories from around other parts of New Jersey and ghost stories from around the world. So now that I've already established those chapters, I can bring them into any of the other books. And if I have other stories in Sussex County in New Jersey, I can put them in that book. Yeah, I have a notepad by my bed that I go to, because a lot of the stuff comes in the middle of the night. And I'll have to get up and literally just write it down, because I'll forget it by the morning. I know it's happened to me before, so I don't want it to happen again. And I write my best stuff in the middle of the night.
Right.
So I can't afford to not write it down. So did I tell you, since my going the traditional that route, I left my publisher and went independently publishing.
Oh, really?
I independently publish my own books. Yeah. The reason why I switched was because I have more control over my work, and I'm putting more of an effort in than the publisher does. And I'm reaping the rewards of that. Because if you have that publisher, they're the middleman. And even though you're doing all this work, you don't know if you're going to be able to trust them to give you your fair share. And then you're stuck. Mm-hmm. So independently, though I do publish my books through KDP, which is Amazon, I'm still more in control and I'm getting paid more than I would have if I had done it traditional. I went immediately to Amazon and used their program called KDP. And that's how I do it. The Audible book I use through Amazon's ACX program, and I do the audiobook through them that way. And then you can still use the Goodreads platforms and the BookBub platforms. You can still use those platforms. The Warren County one I actually worked on last summer, I'm narrating that one myself, because people who have read my book said, we really would like to hear you do the reading, because they've heard me do reading of my excerpts on YouTube or at book signings, and they like the way I read. So I said, okay, well, I'll do the narrating on that. So I'm working on that now. And I did just put out a children's book. Yeah, I went to school to write for children. So, and then I'll end up doing that one on Audible too. I went to school to write for children, yeah. But my heart wasn't there, really. I mean, I just took advantage of the opportunity that was given to me, but I really always wanted to write horror fiction, psychological thrillers. That was my thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up reading Stephen King and Dean Koontz and John Sewell. I mean, those were my inspirations. So it made sense that that was what I would want to write. Although I went to write for children and I enjoyed it, it's fun, it wasn't my thing. So I have this series that I had written and I thought, well, it's sitting there on the shelf, I might as well publish it. But you know, it took me way longer to publish that one little children's book than it did any of the other books. Just because it involves so much and you got to get an illustrator, and it was much harder. But I do have six in the series and I hope to get them all out eventually. But I'm now stuck again, because I'm waiting for the illustrator to see if she'll move on with me. Mm-hmm. If she moves on with me, then we can go into book two. But if she doesn't, then I'm back to square one of trying to find somebody to illustrate at a reasonable price, because they charge an arm and a leg, just like editors charge an arm and a leg. Those are the biggest expenses in either of this business, is those illustrators and the editors. And you need them. You can't produce a good selling product without either of those things being good. You need a good editor, good proofer. You need a good illustrator. And if you don't, then your book is not going to be worth a dime.
Exactly. I have so many books from people that recommend, publishers that send me for their writers to be on my show. Independent writers that just put their book out on Amazon, but they don't have it edited. It's not proofread. And, you know, and you could tell by reading the book, you know, if I can tell, I'm not that great. Like my sister-in-law, she was editing my book. She's got experience in that. And she says, I got a question. Did you fall asleep during your
English class?
I must have. You know. But, you know, I've been using Grammarly and stuff like that to help me along. But yeah, you definitely need it. Even using the programs, you need a person's input to maybe rephrase it or take one section out that, you know, you're already repeating yourself. So yeah, I think that's important to have an editor.
I mean, I'm one of those people, before I buy a book, I'll always look to the reviews. Mm-hmm. And you can't always trust the reviews either, because people randomly just give out good reviews when the book is not really that good. I have a book club, and I tell everybody who's in the book club, you need to be honest about the reviews. And if the book does not deserve no more than 2 or 3 stars, you can review it that way, but make sure you get in touch with the author to tell them what's wrong with it. And hopefully that author is going to take that constructive criticism and grow from it and not put out a shitty product again, because I hate wasting money on a crappy book. Hate it.
Mm-hmm. Having it professionally edited and going that route, you know, you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was on Amazon. I was looking at your Sussex County Hauntings book 3. What happens to a soul, a spirit after the final breath is taken?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think happens to it after the final breath is taken?
That soul decides whether it wants to move on or stay behind, whether it's going to go into the light or not. And different things can happen to prevent a soul from moving on, whether they're attached to this life or if it was a tragic death or it was a child that didn't know. Something like that can keep it behind. The key is to go to that light. Sometimes fear even keeps them from going, I think, sometimes.
Because I've had past psychics, mediums on my show that have expressed the same view, that there is a heaven and there's earth. So you either go into the light to go to heaven, or you stay here in this earthly realm for the rest of your ghostly life. There is no hell.
Oh, I don't believe that. I believe that there is something out there. But I do tell spirit that if you move into the light, you can come back here anytime you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't go into the light, you're stuck here and can't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So you do believe you can move a spirit into the light?
Oh yeah, not me,
not you personally, right? Correct.
But my group together as a whole, mm-hmm. or specific mediums in the group can. But yeah, I mean, I shouldn't really say that, because I do speak to them when I use my dowsing rods and when I use my pendulum, and I do get responses. So I'm sure that they do hear me, but I like to think that it's all of us on a whole that are helping them to go and find that spot.
So you do find that maybe a spirit might go to one person of your team other than maybe somebody else. They can connect that one person on your team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since you have this new team, what is some of their responsibilities in the team?
Same as it was before. You have the mediums that can sense and connect with spirit. They can hear and see and speak. There are others that are the techies that love their equipment and they're in charge of that kind of thing. And there's historians, the ones that like to do the history and find out information that we can connect to the stories. People, pretty much everybody senses something, you know, they're able to go in and sense spirit and they use their tools to connect. So everybody comes to the forum with a different gift and we put it all together and we're able to piece the puzzle together, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
Is this a second children's book that you're working on now?
No, I actually have 6 that are already done. The first one was published in December. It's called Janine Bean Meets Mavis the Camel, and it's about Janine Bean and her many group of friends. And there are all these little individual characters that the children can get to know and recognize in every book. And so I've already written 6 books, but the first one is the only one that was published. The second one that I'm working on is Janine Bean Meets Rudy the Red-Nosed Meanie. And that's obviously going to come out at Christmas time, and it has to do with a Christmas theme story, but the little kid's name is Rudy and he's mean. But I, like I said, getting that out is going to be a chore, because I have to make sure that the illustrator wants to be on board again and get that ball rolling, because it's really hard to get her motivated to do those illustrations.
That's really cool that you go from paranormal hauntings from different counties to a children's book.
I'm the jack of all trades, Well, and don't forget the psychological thriller. So I go from Stephen King-esque, Gene Dean Arcunt-esque kind of vibe to a true account haunting, because I can see spirit, and then children's books. So I'm just one of those jack of all trades.
I was going to say you're probably the most busiest woman I know out there that's... with your writing and the podcasting and the investigations, and plus being a mother and a wife. I mean, that's a busy, busy life.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But you know what? I waited till my girls were full grown to really take that initial step into the writing for me full time. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way, because I wanted to be there and fully for my girls as they were growing up. So... And they've been very supportive, too. My whole family has been really great.
And you might get them into writing also.
Well, my older daughter, she was my editor for the first 2 books, and that's what she did. And she was very thorough. And then for the 3 books, what am I talking about? She was the editor for the first 3 books. And then the last book that I had, my niece, who also does that for a living, was the editor on the last book. So I literally had to scrape through to get another editor for this new one coming out. And I have found one, and hopefully she'll stay with me through that transition. But that's another thing. Finding a good editor is tough.
Like I said, my sister-in-law is doing my editing now. I'm just now looking into all the avenues now, since I'm getting really close to finishing this book. I just rode by that area just recently from where I grew up, and the house is no longer there. It's still like a little vacant lot, but I still get these eerie...
I was just going to say, just because the house is not there doesn't mean that there's nothing still going on there. You could go on there with the paranormal team, and I bet your bottom dollar shit is still happening.
Oh, right. You know, and...
And they build a house on there. They build a house back on that property. That house is going to be haunted.
How do I get information on this house? It's no longer there. And what I've been finding out is this whole northeastern part of the city we live in, the county, is extremely haunted with Indian burial grounds. He says it's very possible that your area is in that section.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I just know that house from day one was haunted, mm-hmm. You know, and it's only taken me 50 some years to write this book, but I want to do a 3-part series.
Let me give you sound advice that my teachers did years ago. If you're going to go the traditional route and somebody asks you to send in the first 3 chapters of your manuscript, and then they send you a letter saying, we want to read the rest. We like what we've seen already. We want to read the last. Then send them in the rest. If they come back and they say, we want to publish you, that's great. But if they ask you to start dishing money out of your pocket, do not believe a word they say, because that's bullshit. A traditional publisher is never going to ask you for a dime.
I heard that, you know, and it's kind of a lot of the vanity presses out there will rake you dry.
Mm-hmm. They're not a traditional real publisher.
Right. And your book's still sitting there and you're not moving any copies.
So I can tell you that like the most gratifying experience was being accepted by a traditional publisher, that my work was good enough for them to want to take it and publish it. That was wonderful. But I just felt like I was having more success doing it on my own financially than I was through a traditional publisher. And that's why I ended up leaving.
Can you move your books that are already traditional published to a soft publisher? Are you stuck with that?
No. That I did. The first book, My Dream, A Little Dream, was the one that was traditionally published. And they had the contract for Jeanine Bean Meets Mavis the Camel. And they sat on that for 5 years. And that was probably what got the fire under my ass, because I really wanted to get Jeanine Bean out and they weren't going anywhere with it. So I finally said, I want the rights to my books back. Mm-hmm. And I got them back. I did get the rights back from the traditional publisher so that I could do it on my own. So
I've written songs over the past years and had everything copywritten on my songs. And I've done a couple poetry works in a collection of poetry books. So I know the route I took there. But, you know, this is a whole different route as far as like writing a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm learning as I'm going along, you know.
Well, everybody does. And we all learn from each other. So that's the way it should be done.
What do you have coming up?
My plans for 2023 is to continue growing my podcast the best way I can, investigating wherever I can. I want to get out the Morris County Hauntings book and the next children's book. I'd like to try and get it done. The next Hauntings book done by Cinco de Mayo this year. I don't know how well that'll work out, but my goal was to try and get that book out and then Passaic County out by Christmas. But, you know, as long as you have a goal to work towards, if it doesn't pan out the way you want it to, it just doesn't pan out. But at least you kept on your schedule and have done your best to do it. So my motivation is to continue writing and get it out as soon as I can.
Well, wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me on again. The one thing as an author you're going to find is probably the most important thing, next to that getting the proofreader, editor, and the illustrator, is those reviews. Those reviews are huge. Whether they're positive or negative, it doesn't matter. A review is a review, and you want to get them as often as you can. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eleanor Wagner, for being on the show today. And please check out her links at the bottom of this episode. And her new book is down there, Sussex County Hauntings Part 3. Go to Amazon and give her a review, read her book, buy her books. She would appreciate that very much. I will see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.